This is Managing Mayhem,
brought to you by two lawyers and a layman.
Because good intentions are not a legal defense.
Wait, I'm sorry, they're not? Okay, well, let's get going then.
Hi, and welcome to Managing Mayhem, a workplace podcast released every 2 weeks. Each episode, we cover a new topic to help managers, HR, and employees navigate the daily workplace mayhem. I'm Jeff.
I'm Patty.
And I'm Jack, and I am the average Joe here, ready to learn.
Oh, good. Glad to have you.
Okay, so what are you telling me about today,
teach
lawyers?
Teach me
something, please.
Today we're going to talk about what to do when an employee is arrested for DUI and their license is suspended.
Bum, bum, bum.
That's not good. I don't like the sound of it.
Now, on this one, we have a listener question presented to us on this topic, which I thought was really interesting. Jack, give it to us.
All right, here we go. Hi, Managing Mayhem. Hello. We have a regional sales manager who was arrested for a DUI. His license is suspended, and now he is asking for us to create a light-duty, non-driving job until he gets his license back. Do we have to accommodate this? Send help, please.
S- I appreciate that.
Send me help.
Sooner than later.
But truly... Do you think you guys can help?
Yeah, now we have to say, you know, right off the cuff, I'm a former criminal prosecutor and Jeff is a former criminal public defender. So right. We may have some differing thoughts. But Jeff, I think because your stint was more recent, you should give us a little bit of background DUIs.
Okay, so first of all, stint was a little bit more recent, but
not a prison stint.
Right. Stint sounds like you've been serving time, the both of you.
Right, like I've had personal experience. Absolutely yeah. Not. I've just offended a number of them.
Is this about you?
What do they say when one of your clients is convicted and they're like, what are we going to do now? And we're like, well, you're going to go to jail now. I'm going home for dinner.
Yeah, I never said that directly, but that's what they always felt. You know, it was like, oh.
What do you mean, we?
We? You got a mouse in your pocket? Anyways, here's a little background on DUIs. Obviously, every state's got a DUI or DWI law, and they're either for being under the influence of alcohol or some other intoxicating substance. But we're just talking about alcohol today. But what happens when there's an arrest is the person gets arrested, they've failed the breathalyzer test, their blood alcohol content's over 0.08, or if you're in the Beehive state of Utah, 0.05, a little bit lower.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or if you're under 21, it's 0.02 typically. So.
Oh,
wow. Yeah.
Fun facts.
Okay.
You just smell the stuff.
Right. But essentially what happens is once you fail that test in some form or another, then you have your license suspended. And that's called an administrative license suspension. And it's usually through the DMV that pulls the license. It has nothing to do with your criminal case or the person's criminal case. And certain states like Idaho will delay it 30 days. And then they give you a 90-day suspension. I know New Mexico is something similar as well. And so a lot of times there's a suspension right off the bat. And this is way before any of the criminal process has truly even begun. And so they haven't been found guilty. They haven't received a court suspension. These are all just civil suspensions from the DMV. And so, and they can vary depending on if the person refused or if they blew and they just failed the test. And so those timelines can vary. But I think people get confused. Even my clients used to get confused. Well, I haven't been found guilty of anything. And it's like, well, the DMV, they have a much lower standard and they pulled your license because we have these implied consent laws when you sign up for a license, right?
Right. You know, those implied consent laws basically say driving is a privilege. It's not a right. And so when you get your license or drive on roads, you're impliedly consenting to a blood alcohol test and not to actually be intoxicated and violate the law.
Right.
So I think that's really interesting because that's important for employers to know as we navigate it, because that's the first step. And then they may get an additional suspension, right, Jeff?
Absolutely.
Like after they're convicted.
Right. So once the person's actually convicted, because their criminal case is actually on a different timeline, it's a much longer timeline. The wheels of justice are a little bit slower, right? And so once they get convicted of the DUI, then the court can actually impose a much longer driver's license suspension. Like in Idaho, for a first offense, it's 180 days, so 6 months.
Right. And I saw for a refusal, it's a year.
Whoa.
And that's a significant. So these are really important for an employer to look up or contact your lawyer to see what are we even talking about in our state.
Exactly. Mm. Everyone gets confused on. My clients used to get confused. You know, why is my license suspended? I haven't been convicted yet. And it's like, well, because having a license is not a right. It's a privilege, and it's through DMV, and they can pull it if you fail one of those BAC tests, blood alcohol content tests.
Okay.
Thank you, Jeff.
That was a good breakdown.
And that concludes my lecture.
Now. That's the episode. Okay, so a lot of information. Let's start with, first of all, how would we even know about, let's call this person Dan, who has the DUI, because it's convenient. How would we even know that Dan was arrested for the DUI?
That's a good question.
This is a really good question. And, you know, I'm kind of thinking to myself, a lot of people, it's like they don't show up to work, so they look on, like, in Idaho, the Ada County website to see if they were arrested. But the best way to know is to actually have a written policy that requires them to disclose any arrest, not just a DUI, any arrest or conviction within 24 hours or before they report to their next shift, whichever is earliest.
Yeah.
And I put that in every single handbook that I review. It's very important to put the accountability on them. And failure to report and disclose it should be immediate termination, because they're not allowing you to do an assessment for safety.
Right.
Okay. So it's the employee's responsibility to communicate that they've been arrested.
Yes.
But if you don't have a policy, generally you find out because someone will tell you. Word spreads quick in the office typically. So,
especially when I'm in the office.
Right. Or they're not there and they have to tell you because they're in jail.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they typically release people arrested for DUIs or they bond out really quick. So,
Okay, that makes sense. I like that. Obviously, I don't like anything about the situation, but it's good. I think that it's the employee's responsibility to communicate. Okay, so then let's say that's communicated. Then what do you do after you have the information?
Well, then you got to talk to Dan and you got to figure out what happened.
Okay.
I would put the onus on them to give you all the information. They get a whole sheet about their administrative license suspension from the DMV when they're arrested, when they're released from jail. They should know their timeline, and I would have them give you all that information and get copies of it. But you need to know how long their license is going to be suspended, when it's going to start, when it will end, at least the administrative one.
Okay.
And then what they were charged for, so you could actually see what the criminal consequences could be as well, to anticipate that.
So there's a document that they can get you as the employer that will have all this information on it?
Yeah, they get a document once when they're arrested that has the administrative license suspension notice. It gives them a timeline to appeal it if they want, all this other information, but they should give that to you.
Okay.
So I've had some employees tell HR, well, call my lawyer. No, it is their responsibility to give you the documentation. And the other thing you should check before we even figure out what you want to do, if anything, if they drive a company car, you need to find out from your insurance company if they can even drive, even if they didn't have a suspension or if it's limited, whether you're going to lose insurance coverage.
Right.
So these are all things you're going to have to collect prior to even deciding what you want to do with Dan.
Right.
Because then it sounds like there's risk that you're taking on by having this person back in a driving position after they've just been arrested for driving under the influence.
Right.
So that's something that the company will have to think about, or a manager will have to think about.
Exactly. I mean, this is all going to be an assessment of risk and also other accommodations, whether it's convenient in your operations, you know, or not. Mm. And so, this is kind of a multi-layered thing, but get your documentation first.
Yeah. And put it on them.
Okay.
That's what I say.
Okay. Yeah. So they communicate. Documentation gets to you. And then in this scenario, Dan, he is asking for the company to create a light duty job, which I don't know totally what that is, while he can't drive. So what is a light duty job, and how do you create a light duty job, or what are the company's obligations for light duty?
What's the difference between a heavy duty job and a light duty job?
I would love the sound of a light duty job. I really love the idea of having a light duty job.
Yeah, so light duty, it's usually referred to in workers' compensation situations where there's been an on-the-job injury and you create or modify the job so that they don't have to perform typically all the essential functions of the job. If there's a lifting requirement, you don't have them lift. You have them do something else. Or you create something else for them to do.
That makes sense. So if someone is hurt and then they can't do the normal stuff, so then while they're healing or whatever, you give them a job that doesn't require them to do the same things while they recover from the injury.
But in this situation, really, if the person's a driver, that's an essential job function, and creating a light duty would require you to remove that. And we just I would say no. You can't. We're not creating any light duty job for somebody.
Right.
Besides a workers' comp injury, it's not really going
to
happen.
And you're not legally required to do it.
Exactly.
And so if you're not legally required to do it, I mean, there's so many things you're legally required to do. This is not one of them. And so I want to make sure employers know that this is not a legal obligation that they have to take on. And it sounds like Dan has a driving job because he's asking for them to accommodate him with a non-driving job.
Uh-huh.
And so I would not remove the driving, but people do it. And
so sometimes people will go above and beyond to accommodate when they don't have to. Is that what you're saying?
Right.
Right. Be careful here of favoritism, because what I see is that you have your top salesperson, let's say Dan was that, and you're like, oh, sure, we're going to accommodate you and we'll create this 6-month light duty.
Right.
And then someone else that isn't favored, you say no to, well, you're going to buy a discrimination claim if you have different genders, different protected classes. So be careful. You're setting a precedent for one person to create a light duty job that I wouldn't recommend, and it will cause legal risk for you.
Okay. So what I'm hearing is there's light duty for when you have an accident or an injury, but I don't have a ton of sympathy for Dan on this situation just because Dan got in a car drunk and like made some decisions.
He made a bad decision, a very bad decision.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't necessarily know that it sounds like a company to bend over backwards to accommodate Dan.
Right.
Right. I mean, I have strong feelings being a former prosecutor who had to prosecute DUIs and saw the damage. And I see a lot of families affected by this. I think that it rewards bad behavior, in my opinion. I understand there's business practicalities, but be very careful here because, I mean, this person made their own decision. So you don't have to bend over backwards to create some new job for Dan because he created this situation.
Right. Mm-hmm. You put yourself there, Dan. Not us. We didn't do this.
We don't need you to do that, Dan.
It would have been a lot better and a lot easier if you didn't do it. But
frankly, I don't want to have to now make a new fake job for you to do.
For the next 180 days to...
Freaking long, whatever state you're in.
It's 60 grand a year.
Yeah.
What if Dan asks if someone can drive him around and he can have a driving Mr. Daisy?
This is something we get. We do get this request. Pretty bold.
I can still do my job if...
If... I have a chauffeur.
And then also what, you're going to have like two, you're going to hire someone else or pay someone else to do one job? Like there's a practicality, like it doesn't make sense.
You know, I had a case once where the person had a DUI, license suspension, and they said, well, we're not taking another employee and paying them, you know, to do it. And he said, well, I'll pay them. And they're like, no, it doesn't legally work like that. We have to pay our own employees.
Well, you have your own LLC for your driver.
And then he's like, okay, well, I'm going to bring my spouse. And my wife said she'll drive me. Okay,
she's not doing anything. She's coming with me.
She's not an employee of the company. We can't do that. That's illegal. They must be an employee. Yeah.
So what I need you is to employ my wife to drive me around and also pay me to be driven by my wife.
Problem solved. Match that 401k.
I think we've got ourselves a good little business here.
Yeah.
It sounds crazy.
Yeah. So none of that makes sense and it's not financially practical.
No. I remember in high school, someone had a breathalyzer installed into their car because they had a court order.
Wow.
Could you get that installed in the company car? Or would that be... And that also seems kind of... Is that extra?
No, I'm just thinking, what parent would let their teenager drive to high school with a breathalyzer?
Like, I guarantee you it was a BMW. No, okay, but they're called ignition interlock systems. These breathalyzers, they have to be professionally installed on the cars. I would absolutely not let someone install it on a company car.
Yeah.
I mean, just like, no. I mean, the liability, the look, everything. It's no.
And just so we're clear, most of these ignition interlock systems are ordered by the court. It's not like a parent is putting in or the person just wants to self-monitor themselves. It's usually a term of probation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, these are court approved. Hmm. Probation gets a report of every time they blow into it. You don't want a company car.
The other thing, what is the look when a customer hops in the car to go on a business trip with this person? They're like, wait, hold on, I got to breathe into the machine. I'd be like, I'm out of here.
Yeah.
Why do you have to do that?
The overwhelming risk, though, is that you obviously know or on notice that you had to install it in your company vehicle. Right. And so it heightens your legal risk if they harm someone.
Yeah.
I just wouldn't go there. I'm with Jeff. Do not go there.
Okay. I'm not advocating for Dan, but like, what about in his personal car? Can we help him out there? Or?
If he's driving that car to and from work, that's his problem. He just needs to get to work. I don't care if he has a breathalyzer installed. But if he's using that personal vehicle to drive for work, I would actually say no. I wouldn't be comfortable with it.
Okay. So there's a lot to do. So what do you actually do with Dan? What other options are there?
I mean, I think you have to figure out what is the actual timeline going to look like? Because, I mean, you could say, hey, you can't drive here. You can't drive our cars. We're not going to accommodate you driving. So if you want to pay for Ubers or taxis, whatever, do that.
If that could work for the job, even like if they're transporting stuff, then it's like, can I get an Uber XL?
Exactly. I'm delivering product to stores.
I mean, or like if it is a shorter period of time and things are going to get resolved, then I mean, maybe an unpaid leave of absence.
Yeah. Go burn all your PTO, take time off, and then an unpaid leave.
They could do that.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing with all of these as well, you're going to have to do it for other people. If you're going to allow someone to take an unpaid leave of absence for a certain period of time to get their license back, you would have to consider that for other people.
And look at the optics of that. You just turned down someone going to their grandma's 80th birthday, but you're going to let Dan take vacation or a leave of absence because to me, you got to be careful on the optics here.
Yeah.
You know, another option is transferring him to a lower paying job temporarily that serves somewhat as a punishment. Like, hey, this is your problem. You created it. We want to keep you, but we're not going to create a new job. But if we have something available that's lower paying, you can take that for 60, 90 days.
Yeah.
I like that option.
Ultimately, I mean, you can terminate. If they can't perform the essential functions of the job, they can't drive,
right,
and you've deemed that it's something you don't want them to do, then you can separate employment because there's no legal requirement to make any sort of accommodation for them.
It's really the most common that people terminate employment. Like, we don't have to deal with this and we don't have time to deal with this. So we're not going to deal with this.
Yeah.
Look at all the facts, consult legal counsel, call us so that we can walk through it, read the paperwork for you and see really what is happening so that you can assess your business risk and whether it works for your business operation because you have a right to run a business.
Yeah. And you don't have to cater everything around one person's decision.
Right.
Exactly. And one person's bad decision.
Yeah, truly.
So there we go.
And that's on that, literally.
Dan the man. This is on you.
Dan the man. Cool guy. Happy now. Okay. So essentially, there's no legal requirement to accommodate someone who has a DUI license restriction. None.
Right.
That's up to you what you're willing to take on. And if you accommodate one person, you have to accommodate everyone. That's kind of seems like a through line for a lot of stuff.
Yes.
If you're going to have that standard for one person, you've got to do it
it's
for everyone.
It's the kind of the no good deed goes unpunished.
Yeah,
yes, exactly.
Right. And then the options are kind of, you can terminate, leave of absence, offer temporary non-driving job or lower paying job, something that gets them out from behind the wheel.
Right.
Okay.
Whew.
Cheers.
All right.
Cheers.
Hope help was sent. And speaking of actual accommodations, Patty and I are having session number 2 of our HR Practical Skills series, and it is on the ADA, Americans with Disabilities Act, and how to do workplace accommodations. And that's on April 2nd from 10 to 11:30 Mountain Time. And if you register, you can use this promo code HRSPECIAL50 for $50 off.
Woo! You can also use it at TJ Maxx.
I want to thank the listener very much for the question. Keep those questions coming at admin@mnwlegal.com.
Yeah.
And today's SHRM activity code is 26QHXCF, as in Frank. 26QHXCF. And I hope you guys have a great week without
mayhem,
criminal charges.
No breathalyzers in the car.
Yes.
Exactly. All right.
All right. See you in 2 weeks.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye.
Managing Mayhem is presented by Management Northwest and Management Southwest and cannot be copied or rebroadcast without prior written consent. By listening to this podcast, you understand that we, or at least two of us, are lawyers, but we are not your lawyers. Therefore, nothing we say on the podcast should be taken as legal advice or considered to create an attorney-client relationship. It is solely